harsh sun beat down as the lieutenant scanned the arid landscape through her night vision goggles. It was midday, but the goggles were useful to detecting the heat signatures of her targets. Her squad was part of an international peacekeeping force, and it was tasked with neutralizing a hostile faction that had seized control of a crucial water supply. They had advanced intelligence thanks to satellite imagery and the latest AI analysis, but the situation on the ground is always unpredictable. As they approached the enemy's position, she launched a swarm of miniature drones to provide real-time surveillance. She watched the feed on her heads-up display, identifying potential threats and relaying information to her team. Suddenly, a volley of gunfire erupted from a concealed bunker. The lieutenant dove for cover, her heart pounding. Using the augmented reality overlay on her goggles, she quickly assessed the situation and was able to pinpoint the enemy's position. An AI system connected to the goggles suggested launching a barrage of mortar fire, giving a more than 76% chance of success, which she approved with a nod. The enemy was caught off guard, their defenses crumbling under the deadly assault. And in the aftermath, as the dust settled, she surveyed the scene. The mission was a success, but the cost of modern warfare was evident in the smoldering ruins and the grim faces of her comrades. All right, so Amit, that was kind of a fictional story of what it might be like today, not in the future, but today in modern warfare. And we see that, you know, lots of conflicts around the world, whether it's in the Middle East, the South China Sea, Eastern Europe, you know, they're all heavily impacted by technology. But this is not new, is it? I mean, we've seen technology impacting the military and warfare, you know, throughout history. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts about how technology has impacted the military and warfare for a long period of time?
So, Mike, I completely agree with you, first of all, right? I mean, the scenario that you mentioned, I don't even think that's that far away. I don't think it's fictional at all. For all we know, this could be happening on a relatively regular basis in some of the places that you unfortunately mentioned. But you're right. None of this is new, right? I mean, a huge amount of our inventions, a huge amount of our energy for time immemorial has been spent into improving military technology, right? Everything from Aristotle's Greek fire, famously, which burned ships, you know, to mentions of something like nuclear weapons or even drones in Indian mythology. There's nothing about this that's new. You know, we've had innovations all the way from chariots, which was really the tank of the ancient times, to the crossbow, which at one point of time was actually banned in Europe. That's how dangerous this thing was considered to be, all the way into the modern age. And if you really, really start fast forwarding just to the last century, right, which is where a huge amount of our technological innovations have really come in, obviously, the multiple wars, the conflicts across Europe and across the world played a huge, huge, huge part in coming up with these technologies. So a lot of the focus with any new technology that was developed, think of steam engines, right? It seems like a pretty innocuous innovation. It seems pretty civilian in use. Well, one of the earliest uses of that was actually for military purposes. I mean, I guess it's just second nature to us to find military use cases for something like that. So steamships massively changed warfare. Obviously, industrialization completely changed warfare because you could now do killing at an industrial scale, really, really unfortunately. Related to that, the chemical technology that came out of the industrial age, everything from really, really dangerous gases, obviously chlorine in the trenches in the First World War, as well as, you know, the process to make ammonia, which was originally the Haber process, which was originally intended for improving yields from crops, was eventually used for military purposes. And then last but not the least, who can forget the big daddy of them all, TNT. Alfred Nobel invents TNT to essentially help shape the earth, and it becomes the number one weapon used in war.
Sure. These technologies, there's positive use cases, but there's also negative use cases. I mean, nuclear is another good example of that. And we've seen it through our history, I guess, you know, since, you know, in the old days when it was hand-to-hand combat, you know, then it was really, you know, human beings against human beings, whatever tools they could have, they can carry. But now we've moved so far away from that that, in fact, today human beings don't really have to play much of a direct role in warfare, despite the fact that we see that happening in many places around the world. The future is looking more and more autonomous, isn't it?
It really is, right? I mean, look, if you really think about it, what the first wave of technology in warfare did is that it disassociated body strength from victory on the battlefield. Because till that point, the army that had people with stronger shoulders and stronger arms was essentially the one that used to typically carry the day. And then with the invention of newer technologies, different ways, unfortunately, of damaging your opponent, you were able to decouple physical strength, even numerical superiority in many cases, from actual victory in the battlefield. And this really was the boon, if you would like to call it. This was the gift, if you would like to call it, of the industrial age. And now, fast forwarding, the kinds of things that you can do. I mean, autonomous drones is just one aspect, which is just absolutely amazing. And we'll just get into that in a little bit. But to me, the whole world that was created by satellites and relatedly by GPS has completely changed how we even think about warfare. It's incredible to know, right? I mean, till as recently as the Vietnam War, the Korean War, obviously World War II before that, till as recently as the first Gulf War in the early 90s, finding where you are on a battlefield actually used to be an incredibly hard task, right? I mean, think about it, right? You're in the jungle. You're in the jungle. You have no idea. You probably have a compass. You probably can't see the sun. You have no idea what to, you know, which direction to go. You're in the middle of a desert. Same thing again. There's a massive sun beating down. Where are you? I mean, are you on enemy territory? How far are you from base? All of these were really, really hard questions. And then all of a sudden that flipped. Satellites, GPS, you can pinpoint the location of every piece of weaponry that you have, probably of every individual that you have. And that was a complete game changer in warfare.
So just knowing where you are changed the game. And I guess knowing where your enemy is also changed the game. And satellites and GPS wasn't able to do that, was it?
So satellites and GPS were a huge step towards doing that. But that combined with embedding that into devices that were given to soldiers, all kinds of sensors that soldiers are now fitted with, that's where the real change started, right? I mean, just a simple statistic. By some measures, between 5 to 20% of the deaths in World War II, the military deaths in World War II, not the civilian deaths, happened because of friendly fire, okay? What does that mean? By some estimates, one out of every five people who died in the Second World War, which is the bloodiest war, you know, our species has known, were essentially killed by their own side, which is a huge problem, which arises essentially from not knowing who you're firing at any given time, of not knowing who really the enemy is. And this happens, obviously, in the craziness of a battlefield. Look, I'm not a soldier. I've never carried a weapon or trained for any of these things. But to the best of my limited knowledge, battlefields are incredibly crazy places. The more information that you give your side, the higher the chance you have of beating the enemy. It's as simple as that. Information truly is power on the battlefield.
So this is the technology, which is less about the better weapon, but more about the power of information. And I think there's a very interesting example of that after, you know, the first Gulf War and after 9/11, right, when, you know, the U.S. had military superiority, in no question, right, no question, had the best trained troops, it has the best weapons, it had all technology, but they were still failing to, you know, root out the terrorists based in Iraq and Syria, and these other places, right? Because these, you know, small, semi-autonomous, but communicated, connected, right? So the value of real-time information was a a powerful counterweight to the best technology that was out there from a military point of view. So this gets us to kind of information warfare, right? So where are we on that? You know, what are we seeing in terms of AI, communication technology, crypto warfare, you know, all these types of things that, you know, where are we today and where do you think that's going?
So I think even before we come to the actual AI for use in equipment, there's the AI for use in targeting, there's the AI for use in just the algorithms to predict stuff, right? It's fascinating. I remember reading an article by a few students of geography, okay? This was back right after 9/11 when there was a massive worldwide manhunt for Osama bin Laden, and pretty much every source of intelligence that we had, at least in public, claimed that he was basically hiding in some godforsaken cave in the middle of Afghanistan. So what these kids had done, and they were doctoral students in some university in the United States, they had analyzed animal migration patterns and used that to kind of overlay into how criminals flee. And they had applied that to drug traffickers and stuff like this. And at the time, and this was several years before he was actually found and assassinated, they had predicted that he's actually living in a mid-sized city with certain characteristics, in a home of certain characteristics, within so many kilometers of hospitals, military bases, and so on and so forth. And it turns out they were right, right? I don't know the details of the algorithm, obviously, but just continuing along those lines, we now have algorithms that can predict the possibility of attacks, right? This is definitely military technology. This is definitely AI in use, because what this does is it takes all kinds of information. It takes information from satellites saying, hey, look, at night in this particular valley in, you know, this part of the world, all villages typically go dark. But whenever there is more light in a village, wherever there is more carbon dioxide being emitted from this village, there is a probability that within 1 to 3 days in a X kilometer radius, there's going to be a massive attack that originates from that particular point, right? So these kinds of AI technologies are just absolutely incredible, and they're changing warfare as we know it. Yeah.
There's the one very famous one, Project Maven, the US government project, which is actually started, Project Maven started by looking at images and video that was, you know, taken or scraped off the internet or whatever, and you know, using markers to try and understand where they were taken, right? What is the location using AI? And now Project Maven has apparently, you know, expanded much, much, much beyond that to kind of a very sophisticated AI system to help the U.S. Armed Forces to make decisions in battle situations, to understand, like you said, you know, enemy movements, and with a very, very high degree of accuracy and detecting and classifying objects and activities.
And then, Mike, you add to that particular targeting knowledge the autonomous drones and autonomous weapons that you spoke about, and all of a sudden, you're looking at a level of lethality that is basically unsurpassed in our civilization, right? You now have drones, there are multiple countries that already have them, you know, actioned. They're out there in the field, evidently, that once you fire them, are completely autonomous. You know, they can make decisions. They actually scan the ground. They have the ability to identify friend versus foe, and they've got multiple warheads, and they can fire those. I mean, just the sound of that, I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but evidently this is something that's been happening relatively at scale for a while now, right? You've got drones that can identify targets. You can drones that even self-select targets if they have multiple options from which to choose. And all of this happens with, as of now, minimal and probably no human intervention.
This is a little scary, right? Because, you know, the predator drones, you know, which would be unmanned, so they'd be flying around. They didn't have a pilot, but they would still be controlled by humans, right? They'd have cameras on them, and a human being somewhere in the world would control this thing, fly it around, and decide what to do. You know, that's one level of autonomy. Now you get these, you know, next generation, you know, MQ-9 Reaper type drones, where not only is there not a pilot in there, so it's autonomous in that sense, flies itself, but it doesn't need a human to tell it what to do. It can figure it out itself.
To green light taking a shot, for example.
Exactly, right. Exactly. If the certain conditions are in place, it can do it itself. It can figure out what to do. And that's a whole new level of autonomy. And do you see that kind of increasing? Are we going to see more of that? So basically, not just taking humans out of harm's way by making these things autonomous, so they have autonomous land vehicles as well as drones, but actually putting the decision-making power of whether to, you know, fire or not out of the hands of humans and into the hands of sort of, you know, technology, AI, whatever. Do you see that as being an increasing trend?
I do. I unfortunately do, right? I mean, my understanding is there are already autonomous machine guns that, quote unquote, patrol the borders between North and South Korea that have been trained. So then, you know, for example, if a deer runs across the fields, they will not fire. But if a human tries to run across, they will open fire, something like this, right? I mean, and there's obviously no human controlling them 24/7, to the best of my knowledge. They truly are autonomous. I suspect that for a confluence of reasons, we will see more of this. On the one hand, is exactly like you said, why put a human in harm's way when you can put, you know, basically bits of metal and plastic to do the job? I think especially as the rich countries of the world suffer a decrease in population, a decrease in working age population, there's going to be pressures on the military in terms of recruiting. I know that the United States military is one, for example, that's already facing massive pressures in most of its branches. And this seems like an obvious solution. Why wouldn't you use it? I mean, if you are, for example, the Japanese military that's ramping up now, given all the new geopolitical threats, and knowing what Japan's birth rate is, knowing how Japan's population has been decreasing, why would you not invest in this for the future? So I do see this as something we will hear more and more about as we go on.
And ethical issues, I mean, you know, this one thing is, you know, having a robot car, you know, park for you, but to decide whether it shoots a mortar weapon into a house or not, or a biological weapon potentially, or shutting down a city, you know, infrastructure, and outsourcing that to some kind of technology, what, you know, clearly there are ethical issues here. How do you think that's going to play out?
Massive ethical issues, right? I mean, how will these things calculate collateral damage, right? Is it just going to be on the basis of an algorithm? It's okay if one innocent person dies as long as I get 10 bad people. I don't know. I mean, these are all open questions. I think, to the best of my knowledge, what I'm hearing is, at least explicitly, most militaries say they will still continue to have humans in the loop for now, right? Whether that's going to be practical in every situation, I do not know. But to explicitly at least have, whether implicitly they do that, I don't know, but explicitly at least saying we have a human in the loop kind of tries to address some of those issues, but it's still not an open and shut case, even with humans in the loop, right? Because if the recommendation is still coming from an algorithm, how much power does a human even have to understand what's going on behind the algorithm besides just saying a yes or a no? Okay, so these promise to be really, really, really messy issues with no easy answers in sight.
So the future is, well, is it bright or is it dark?
The future, I mean, look, I mean, you know me, I think both of us are eternal optimists, Mike. So I do think overall the future is bright. My hope is that these weapons, and we've been saying that throughout history, my hope is that these weapons will actually lead to a reduction in warfare, not an increase in warfare. They will hopefully lead to a reduction in casualties, both civilian and military. But again, like I said, I'm an eternal optimist. How do you feel about this, Mike?
Well, I'm also an optimist, as you know, but you can't overlook the fact that there's a big difference with digital technologies compared with, you know, more conventional weapons, because, you know, you can have international treaties to restrict the proliferation of nuclear weapons or chemical weapons or biological weapons, because those are things that you can track and trace, right? I mean, these are physical things. But when it comes to an algorithm, I mean, yes, you can put in the restrictions, but how can you, practically speaking, enforce, monitor and enforce what happens in somebody's basement? or in a government of a rogue state. So it's less clear to me how to kind of restrict and stop really bad things from happening when it comes to kind of these digital cyber AI type weapons. So I'm an optimist, you know, I'm hoping we can figure it out. But, you know, I do have this nagging feeling that if we create these technologies, they are potentially going to go out of our control, maybe more so than they have done in the past.
So Mike, if I were to ask you, what are the top three military innovations in your mind? What would you say? And I'll give you mine.
Okay. The you mean throughout history? The top three.
Throughout history.
Well, I mean, I truly believe that technology has had a massive impact on warfare throughout history, and that, you know, many of the big civilizations that have taken power have done so on the back of new technologies that didn't exist. So what are the three big ones? So maybe some honorable mentions first. I think is, you know, and I'll sort of go through history. I think the horse was a great technology. I mean,
incredible,
right? It allowed speed of movement and agility. I mean, that was really the technology that helped the Mongols, you know, take over, you know, much of Asia.
Much of the known world at the time, basically.
Much of the known world. Even getting into, you know, Eastern Europe through Russia and all the mid-Asian states, China as well. And that was really, you know, not exclusively, but largely on the back of horses. So I that's an honorable mention. I think, yeah, I love Greek and Roman history and the phalanx, which was basically these shields that they would put together. And allowed them to have kind of a movable defensive position, which didn't really exist before. And that kind of led to the sort of standing armies and the organized militaries that they were had. I think the longbow, so the British perfected the longbow, which allowed them to inflict damage from great distances, which didn't exist before. You know, the airplane, you got to say in World War One, and particularly World War Two, radar. I mean, you talked about satellites, but, you know, the precursor of that, radar. Aircraft carriers, I think, were a big reason that the Americans beat the Japanese in the Second World War, because they were able to launch aerial raids from closer distances. So I think there's a whole bunch out there. But if I were to pick three, number one, gunpowder. Gunpowder.
I agree with you.
Gunpowder. Really,
that is on my list as well.
That
changed everything.
It did. It really changed everything. I mean, traditional fortifications like city walls and stuff, and armor, medieval armor, suddenly became obsolete. You know, the one thing about gunpowder is you don't need to be highly trained, right? You know, a swordsman or a bowman, you know, you have to be trained, but really anybody with very little training can load up a musket and fire off a shot. Very difficult to defend against. I think it changed warfare. It led to European colonial expansion. I mean, there's so many reasons why gunpowder and, you know, what it became was a huge technology. So that's the first one. The second one, for me, is nuclear power. Because you got to this, with nuclear power, you suddenly got to this kind of mutually ensured destruction where, you know, you could actually end it all for everyone. Right. So you have enough of these weapons, and it actually led to the Cold War. So it led to a whole different type of conflict. And in a way, it reduced conventional warfare, I think, for a number of decades among the major powers anyway, and led to a bunch of new alliances and so forth. So I think nuclear, this kind of the idea that you have the power to end everything, was a huge impact on technology impact on warfare. And the third one is what we're talking about today. I mean, digital tools and weapons, right? It has to be AI, cyber warfare, autonomous weapons. All those are having a massive impact. And you know, even though a lot of conflicts today feel like the same old conflicts, behind the scenes, you know, digital technologies are having a massive impact on how those wars are being fought. And I think that the ones in the future are going to look very, very different than they do today because of that. So those are my top three: gunpowder, nuclear power, and digital tools and weapons. Well, how about yours?
So gunpowder is common. I think gunpowder has had such an impact on our civilization, it's hard to understate its importance, right? So without a question, gunpowder. But my second one is a little left field, right? I mean, you know, I think it was General Omar Bradley in the Second World War. He said, you know, amateurs talk about strategy, professionals talk about logistics. Food canning, canned food, was actually a military invention. It was invented by a general in Napoleon's army, because it was Napoleon who said, army marches on his stomach, right? Food canning has been such an incredible thing, not just for the purpose of logistics, but its spillover into civilian life. It really, really, really has changed dramatically how we live, right? I mean, how armies work, how the entire logistics supply chain around them work, how, you know, they can project power, exactly like you said, using things like aircraft carriers and bombers and all those kinds of things, I think has been absolutely amazing. And my third one is a little bit more forward-looking, is only starting to have an impact right now, and that's unmanned drones. Because I think with unmanned drones, we are just scratching the surface, because now you're talking about the power to send thousands of drones in coordinated attacks. It's still a little bit of science fiction, but not for long probably, which can take out entire installations, which can take out entire bases without theoretically a shot being fired. So those are my top three. Pretty nasty ones, but fun ones to talk about.
Fun ones to talk about, but hopefully not ones that we're going to see impacting us in the near future.
Indeed, yes. And again, like everyone else, we hope that these will eventually be instruments of peace rather than instruments of war.
And that's, I think, a good point to close the episode with a note of optimism. Amit, thanks again for discussing this topic, tech and the military. If you want more information on IMD programs, just please go to imd.org. That's imd.org. And you can find out all the programs that we offer on all kinds of different topics, including the impact of AI on business and society. That's all for today. We'll see you next time on Mike and Amit Talk Tech.